This is Scenic Roots talking writing. Our guest again this week is Kim McLean, singer, performer, songwriter, teacher, label owner. As the poet Walt Whitman put it, I contain multitudes. Certainly it's true of Kim McLean, whose biggest challenge is finding the time to pursue all of the projects and initiatives she has in mind, some of which we touched on in this part of our conversation. We started out talking about her most recent album, which would have been a double album on vinyl. Titled Shadows on Light, it showcases both the secular and the sacred sides of her writing and her life. She has written very successful songs for a number of gospel acts, as well as for a wide range of secular singers, including Betty LaVette, Loretta Lynn, Jennifer Hanson, and Tim McGraw.
Well, I've been Grammy nominated in two genres. I've been Grammy nominated in Christian music and in country music. It felt like those two worlds are very opposite or very different, very distinct. There are people who will make statements in the entertainment world if they know you're Christian or if you tout your Christian faith, specifically Christian, not just spirituality, but Christian, you get branded a certain way. And they would encourage you in the secular, in the non-Christian genres, not to emphasize that Christian faith. I would have booking agents and managers tell me they wouldn't work with me if I wanted to work in the Christian field because they said they just didn't admire that. We don't really have to go into all of that, I suppose. And in the Christian field, they often wouldn't want to work with you if you were going to have songs in what they call the secular field. Well, to me, it's all God. It's all, that broke my heart. But I started learning to censor what I said. And then that felt fake to me. And as we said earlier, I'm not very good at faking it. And I'm not a very good actress. I didn't like having to hide. It felt like in some circles I was expected to hide part of who I was. With this project in particular, I decided to be all of it. And I did do CD1 and CD2, and I made a line of distinction there. And I did that to soften the blow, really, for some of my Christian colleagues. Soften the blow. I know that probably sounds like a harsh way to say that, but I felt like the way I needed to do that, to say, hey, I still sing and write these country songs that deal with issues of broken relationships and sexuality and life challenges, and I still love Jesus. So, yes, this project brought us to what has been described to me as two different worlds, and it was my way of saying it's all one world to me. I would like to own it all. You know, I'm going to put this out there, and if you're uncomfortable with my Christian faith or with my worldliness, then maybe I'm not the artist for you.
That seems so weird to me because you've had huge gospel music hits. Mm-hmm. And people realize it's the same person, right? That's writing that, that's writing the secular songs.
They do, but they never had me come and perform my own songs on any of those Bill Gaither or Down Home.
You can live in both worlds as a writer, but not as a performer.
Right. That's what I have found to be true. Now, I like to own responsibility for my own life journey. I don't like to feel like, I just feel like it's good to own it. So it could be that I didn't knock on those doors, or maybe I kept them at arm's length without realizing it. But I do know that I have, you know, I'm certainly not a victim of the industry or anything like that, but I don't feel like I missed out in any way. I have thought a time or two of calling Bill, because Bill Gaither walked up to me at an event one time. I was so shy. I'm terrible. I'm not just terrible at putting on wigs and enough makeup and getting bodily enhancements so I can be on the stage. I'm not good at that sort of, to my mother's chagrin, I'm not a foo-foo girl. I'm not any better at some of the social settings. I like to be the fly on the wall at the parties. I like to take it in and observe. But Bill Gaither walked up to me, and I thought, oh gosh, Bill Gaither's walking up to me. And he walked directly up to me, and he said, I'm so happy to meet you. I just want you to know that I'm aware that you have single-handedly changed the sound of gospel music, and I bet you don't even know that. And he said, but you changed the way we did things with your writing. Well, I didn't know that, and I didn't ever go to the parties, and I thought, well, and then he walked off, and one of my friends said, oh my gosh, do you know who that was? I said, yes, okay, they're right. Yes, do you hear what he just said to you? I said, yes, but it's not going to do me any good unless he says it in a magazine that gets published, or unless he has me on his show. Well, unless he writes with me, and he didn't say it to anyone else out loud. He said it to me. And I thought, okay, well, I can, sure, if I go say it in an interview now, well, I'm saying it in an interview now. But it's like, sure, right, Bill Gaither said that to you. But yes, he did, but I wasn't recording it. You know, it's like I get this little personal triumph moment, and it feels good, but he didn't have me on his shows that I've been paid for all of my songs. He said dozens of my songs have been performed on his videos, but he had the artist who recorded them on his videos. And I thought about calling him and said, why don't you let me come sing one sometime? Because he knows, surely he knows how to find me, but I never called and asked, could I do this? And I think I maybe enjoy having the best of both worlds.
The song was a huge hit for the Christian music trio Sierra. Written by Kim McLean, it's called No Stone to Throw.
Maggie lives on 2nd Street, downtown by the river. She looks away from everyone she meets. They've got no time to give her.
I don't see you as a victim, but at the same time, I think that what we've just been saying sort of reinforces what you were saying earlier, that there's a definite line between performer and writer.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to be, you know, the different rules apply to each.
Right, and Bill does both. Now, Bill Gaither does, of course, is known as he's a copyright writer in Christian music. And also an artist. Has helped a lot of writers and artists along the way as well. I'm launching my own company now because I want to help writers and artists along the way. But I love making my own CDs, and I've got some new recordings that I'm about to release. I let a lot of time go by since I did this Shadows and Light album, and I'm ready to get out and say something again now.
I do think it's interesting that you have also assumed the producer's role, and I'm wondering, given the perspective that you have and the insights and the experience that you have, when you come to work with female performers, what do you say to them?
Working with female performers as a producer, I've had the opportunity to work with artists who became great friends, and that's really the only way it could work, because I am an artist. It can be tricky working with, you know, I'm a better producer because I'm an artist. I'm only a producer because I'm musically trained and I am an artist.
Well, it's also said that, you know, you have this reputation for helping these young artists find their voice, as they put it, that you have a gift for that, you know?
Yes, I have a gift for it. And the challenge for me is I have to stay, in some of those cases, I have felt like I needed to stay off the topic of my own artistry so that I could be really only encourage them as an artist. That was uncomfortable for me because, again, it feels like hiding part of who I am. So I've wanted to work with artists who were secure enough in themselves to let me be the artist I am and help them as an artist as well.
It's a complicated relationship, I would think, isn't it? Because you're a producer, you have your voice, you have your point of view. They are a young artist attempting to develop their voice and their point of view. And somehow you have to find a fusion where you can both kind of express yourselves within that, whatever you're creating, right?
Fusion is a good way to say it, and there has to be great trust. Some of my favorite albums I've produced, Shanna Morrison, her father is Van Morrison. She's one of my dearest friends, one of my closest friends. Producing her album, we wrote together for a lot of it, and then she did some songs that I wrote that we didn't co-write. She's just so confident in her own artistry and what she's doing, and she respected me as an artist as well, and knew that that fusion could happen and that my artistry would not get in the way of wanting her to shine. You know, there's no threat there, no competition there, and that makes it better.
Hey baby, you're out of touch, here I go. And yes, I'm gonna slam the door. This time it's not.
And then Eve Stellis is another one. And something Eve likes to say that I like to quote her as saying is that if you take two candles and you put them in a dark room, the room shines all the more brightly. The candles don't take away from one another's light. It just makes more light. And she's one of my dearest friends. I also produced an album for Lisa Brokop, and there was confidence there. And, you know, because you can't, it doesn't serve the artist you're producing if you hide, try to pretend that you're not an artist in your own right. We have to be able to get on the stage and perform together and be equally great. I think that's very important. And it can be tricky. There have been, in the Nashville scene, sometimes it seems like along the way, there were opportunities for me to produce when the artist was threatened by my being an artist. They would want to find a voice through me, and I have a really good stage presence, so they would want to start holding their guitar the way I hold it, or their manager would start saying, move the way Kim is moving up there, do that thing that Kim is doing there. And a couple of them would say, oh, could you record the demo? I want to copy the way you're singing it. Well, that turns it into something that's uncomfortable for both of us. That happened on a couple of different occasions, and I moved away from those situations because it crossed an ethical line and a self-respect line for me that made me uncomfortable.
What do you mean? You feel like you're sort of co-opting their persona?
Yes, co-opting where they were borrowing my move, my sound, and if they gave me credit for that, fine, but if it was taking it and owning it as their own when I was making records too, that's not imitation in that sense. Didn't feel like a high form of flattery.
Well, at the same time, artists are notorious magpies, aren't they?
Yeah.
I think Dylan said, don't borrow, steal. I mean, I'm sure he's not the first person to say that.
Right. I wasn't very comfortable with that. The artists would be innocent. Like, as I started getting older, I was too old for them to offer me a record deal. So there'd be a young girl they wanted to offer a record deal who was younger and prettier than me. But I was making records and wanted to become an indie artist. And it could cross a line into being somewhat insulting. I feel a humility and humbleness. But I wasn't willing to lay down my dignity when it felt like that to me, whether they meant to do it or whether it was inadvertent. It would be these conversations happening as though I wasn't in the room, and there I sat. And I wasn't going to be getting paid for that. Or there were things where it started not only affecting my sense of what I was there to do, but it also affected me monetarily, and that crossed a line that felt unfair to me. But, you know, we're in charge of our own careers. There's never a need to have grudges or to stay in situations we're unhappy with. You see that happening, and you say, you know what, this is for someone else to do because I'm an artist. I'm still an artist. And I can help make you a great artist, but I still get to be a great one too. And we can all win. You don't have to talk about me like I'm not in the room.
On Scenic Roots, this is Talking Writing. Our guest is songwriter and singer Kim McLean. From the album Shadows and Light, this is a song called Somebody Must Be Praying.
Somebody must be praying. Somebody must be lifting me up. Somebody must be praying. suddenly hearing a heavenly sound. Oh, somebody must be praying, praying. Somebody must be living.
Let's all give credit where credit's due, because I want to be an encourager that way. That's why I wanted to start my own company. It's because I am an encourager.
And yes, you are. And, you know, the first thing that strikes me from what you're saying is people don't listen with their eyes, because that's all about marketing, right? And we both know
right.
that that's, what, about a three-year window, and that's it, you're done. If that's what you're playing off, what you look like
yeah.
will carry you for a couple of years, a generation, basically, and then that's it.
Yeah.
Whereas somebody like yourself, who's been making music for almost a lifetime,
yeah.
you're still making music and people are still listening to it, and I think that's a big difference.
Yeah.
But it's one that the music business, quote-unquote, often ignores, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it's the same. When you're behind the scenes as a producer, when I went from being someone who was being pursued as a new, unseasoned writer, you know, they realized I was a much bigger moneymaker by writing for everyone because I was so prolific and am so prolific. But I moved, aged out of the category of major record deal. And someone they could not pursue. So then they started pursuing me as a producer and giving me those opportunities. You start hearing some of the conversations behind the scenes. And you start putting two and two together, or I did, an approaching middle-aged female hearing the conversations, or they're having the conversations with me. And I thought, oh my gosh, you were saying those things about me when I was young, weren't you? Then you realize, I was just a poster girl for you. I don't know if we think that people forget that as they get older, you don't care as much, but I'm sort of a timeless person in my spirit. And so I'm still as young as I've ever been, and I'm already as old as I'm going to be. I live in this eternal mindset, and I love that. I think that's how we have wisdom, is we keep this childlikeness and we respect our old age before we get there, and we're all everything in between. Some of these sexist comments.
Thank you so much for saying that. I'm going to take that home. I've wrestled with that all the time. I'll be 70 years old on my next birthday, and I just don't think of myself that way. I feel like you do. I'm not sure how old I am. I just am who I am, you know?
I know. Have you ever been doing a thing, and you're just happy, gleeful, and you have this emotion that's similar to the same emotion, you're the same person you've always been, and then you walk past the mirror, and you think... Who's that? I forget.
Yeah, I can relate to that one for sure.
That's
yeah.
So weird.
Well, the cool weird. Thing is, though, with all of the insight that you have gained, wow, you're going to be a great label boss, I would think. These young musicians who are coming to you are going to be able to draw on so many different aspects of your experience, and you can help them beyond, you know, the purely artistic, what they do in the studio.
Yeah. That's true.
And is it working out that way? Because you've been label head for a while, right?
I really just have been laying low, and I'm just about to relaunch, actually. So my label is HCT Media, and my brand is Hippie Chick Twang. I'm just now beginning to relaunch it. And my original vision for it, yes, it has existed for several years, but I've been doing a makeover, if you will. So I'm a music company, but I'm a music and lifestyle company. Yes, I'm an indie label. I have publishing and releasing music with artists like myself and Sherry Cothran. I'm not a publishing and record label in the same sense of being in competition with Music Row. I'm designing a new thing. You know, I could comp just as easily as with the Life is Good organization that sells the T-shirts and
right.
the hats and
right.
the attitude. That's why this was born. But I do have all of these resources. So I have a spectrum of artists that are of my caliber, Sherry's caliber, who have been doing this for a long time, and we're professional artists who've been in the big time. But then I'm also a teacher, you know. I'm the director of the songwriting program at Tribeca University. So I have these teaching resources, and I teach in my own business. So my company, the Hippie Chick Twang website, is about to open. Right now, if you click on hippiechicktwang.love, you see a holding place, which I'm hoping is launched within the next week or two. I've been working furiously on it. Furious Not Angry, Furious with great energy. And it will have everything from representing the indie artist and launching the music and a platform for the music, but it's a partnership with the artist. So Sherry will own her own masters to her project. So I did not foot the bill or provide the capital for her record. She owns that, but I'm in partnership with her. And to help her, I want my motto is connecting creative people with creative power. And that power is giving them the resources that I have, this 30-year career of resources and networking and expertise and consultation, the resources of the label, the resources of the creative community. I have a Hippie Chick Twang is a creative collective. And it's also the resources of the branding. A Hippie Chick Twang is an attitude. It's a vibe. It's a positivity vibe. It's a way you dress. It's a community of inspiration. But it's also the resources of the power within you.
This is Scenic Roots. Our guest this afternoon on Talking Writing was Kim McLean. The Hippie Chick Twang Love website she mentioned is up and running. To close, this is the title song from her most recent album, Shadows and Light. Thanks for listening.
Pilgrim in my soul, you never try to hold me down. You don't live to control me, and I love you for it, baby. You ain't afraid of my darkness, wrap it around you like velvet. I can fall asleep beside you, trust you with my secrets. You're my safe place, where I run to find my grace. You're my north star in the night. I give you my life, my shadows and
I am a motivational speaker. I am a spiritual person. There's a menu on the label that is for spiritual practice, you know, and groups that can meet, whether you're a Christian group or whether you're a motivational spiritual group, whatever your faith expression is, where we meet. I've got one right now that meets on Tuesday night, and it's just to help you get your stride in that moving forward and that thing that empowers you from within to keep this going. The perspective that is the wisdom that I have gleaned from working with Betty and Mamie and Dolly and Loretta.
Well, let me tell you, since you just brought up Betty, that clearly Betty was right. You have grown into who you are, and a business mm-hmm. that didn't really see you or get you at all, you are now in a position where you can make that business into who you are rather than the business trying to make you into what they are. And I think that's I think that's wonderful that that's happened. And that takes a great deal of courage and drive and insight to be able to reach that point.
Yeah, it does. Thank you for noticing. And, you know, it can really make the industry. I've had a couple of occasions when, I mean, I guess calling it, referencing it as the industry, it's really just a couple of remarks from a couple of people, but I had the idea that it made them angry, certain people angry that I wouldn't fit into the mold. But I tried. I was courageous, that's true, and I have a certain set of values that matter to me. You've got to know what you value, not values as in morals. It is morals, but it's not just that, it's what you value. And I value the self-expression more than that's just something I value. I value, you've got to know. And when it kept coming to choices, I just was not able to fit the credentials they needed me to fit quite the same way. Going back to my college degree as an example, that took time and resources. And I could have been spending that time with finding booking agents and managers. And I didn't.
Did you publish your thesis?
I did. But I would like to take that now and reframe it in the way that I talk.
Yeah, because I think it would make a heck of a book. Just the insight you offered when you came here last time that most songwriters are neurotic. That's kind of an interesting insight, you know, and it tells you a lot, you know, if you really want to sort of delve into it.
Yes, it's true. Challenging to find the thing to focus on. The reason I haven't hit the ground running was, okay, I finished my pieces. Okay, now I'm going to do this. I'm going to run this label. I really had to put my record label and my company, my music company. I had to tuck it away and be kind of the wizard behind the curtain for a while so that I could decide, how do I want to do this? What do I want to present to the world? How can I best serve the world? Because there are too many choices and I can't do everything. And I want to do it what I do well. And so I've been just sorting things through. It's like going through a closet full of stuff and saying, okay, which part of this wardrobe do I want to keep and what's it time to let go of now? I've got to get definition. I've got to get clarity. And so there's the chaos of creativity, and it's scary. My safe place, where I run.